the evening, and happy Shabbat to everyone. Welcome to Yada Yah Radio. It is my pleasure to welcome JB back. How you feeling there, Dad? Get any sleep?
From time to time. Wife's taking most of the hard part. So I got
She's taking the hard duty. Yeah, you're dangerous. I mean, you could, at night you trip up, you kill yourself and the baby. Hey, I'm glad to hear you're back.
What I do is when she needs to get some sleep, I'll take the baby and walk around the house in circles all night.
The greatest joy in the world. You have to look at that your little daughter and say, how in the world did we do this?
More like, how do I not mess this up?
Yeah, I know that.
It's perfect. How do I keep it that way?
Yeah, you know, it's raising a child is always the product of unskilled labor, and we just naturally rise to the occasion, and you'll love her through it.
Oh yeah,
JB, we've also got Kirk and Larry. How are you guys?
Just fine. Congratulations, JB.
Thank you.
Life's peachy, and I even saw Patty do a post here. In unpopular here at Days.
Oh, wow, good.
So she had been missed as well. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. She's sweetheart.
She was like AOL, man. You know?
Yeah. I pulled a reverse Hezekiah. You know, Hezekiah said, you know, we're just not ready. We need another couple of weeks to prepare. Can we postpone Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim? Well, I took just the opposite approach. I think in the non-broadcast portion of our program last week, I had received a series of text messages from my son, who was sick down there in Texas, asking me to fly in early the next morning, which I did. And so while I was down there, because I just don't very often get to enjoy Pesach with my son, we celebrated it early. You know, we talked to the boss and said, if Hezekiah could do it late, okay with you if we did it start early, because it's the only night I could really do a Pesach dinner with him and get the grilled lamb, and everything was Sunday evening. So I'm well into my celebration of matzah. So there's timing I wouldn't recommend anybody follow. But we had a great time. It really felt good to be able to do it with my son.
Thank you.
I am, however,
hey, before you get started, there was a question from a girl in the group who was saying, "How do you get familial covenant out of a bereath?" And I explained that it was based on Bayith. She couldn't find anything showing Bayith meaning home and family. And I said, well, of course it does. I mean, it's like Bayith, you know.
Home. Yeah, I don't know how you could get it. Yeah, it's in like the town. We have them all over America. Bethel.
Yes, Bethel. Yeah,
you know, home of God, family of God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Bayith family. I'm just going to take a shot in the dark here. I bet the word is used more than 500 times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And it's the only difference between Bereth, covenant, which is the family-oriented covenant relationship, and Bayith is the Rosh. You know, it's the addition of a Rosh. So it's clearly based upon Bayith. And God constantly speaks of the chosen people being His children. Matter of fact, I'm in the process right now, after having translated two of the Proverbs, where God speaks to His children as the Father, and even speaks to His children as our spiritual mother, showing that this is a family-oriented relationship. And Yashayah, the beginning of Yashayah. And I'm making an attempt to go through Yashayah progressively to show the direct connection between the whore that is introduced, which is the whore of religion that is introduced in Proverbs 6 and 7, and Babylon, and also with Satan. And so the best place to do that is to systematically go through the path that Yahweh takes us through in the first 13 to 14 chapters of Yahshayah. And he begins Yahshayah by saying, I reared my children. You know, I did everything I could to nourish you, to care for you, to lift you up, to enhance your well-being. And the thanks I received is you rejected me. You know, you now are in direct opposition to me. You know, why'd you do that? So it even shows that when his children are wayward, they're still his children. It's a family relationship. When Yahweh and Hosea speaks of the divorce decree, what he says is that you are no longer my children because you broke the covenant relationship. So it is a family-oriented, home-based relationship. It's one of the reasons, and I mentioned this today, Larry, during the observations program, which is that when we're speaking in English, there are some words in English that miss 90% of the meaning that is conveyed in Hebrew. That's why Hebrew is so much better. And I said my favorite example is covenant. If I say covenant in English, I'm not conveying any of the word's meaning. I mean, a little bit of it,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
In Hebrew, it's bereth, which is family-oriented covenant relationship, speaking of a home and family. And it's based on bereth, and it conveys so much meaning. And all of that is, or most all of it, is lost when it's replaced with covenant.
Yeah, because what she was looking up said contract, this, that, you know. And, you know, yeah, I guess.
Well, that's true.
To some degree.
By the way, the covenant is a contract. There's no question about
it.
Yes,
it is. Yeah,
it's a contract. It's a marriage vow.
Adopted into a family, basically.
Right.
But
yeah. Now, but it is true also that if you look at in most of the lexicons and dictionaries, and this is why I think this is a good question. If you look at most lexicons and dictionaries, they do not provide a complete or accurate translation of many words. You really have to work to get the meaning. And what you have to do is you have to look at what are the letters that were used to convey this word. What is the actionable root of this word? In the case of covenant, bereth, since bereth is also a noun, family, and not a verb, the verbal root is bana. And even Strong's will take you directly to bana and say that bana is the root of bereth. Well, bana means to rebuild a home, to establish a family. To convey and reaffirm a name.
Bana is
actually the feminine of Ben.
Well, you know, the entire words are based on children, mother,
right.
Father.
Well,
he calls
it Bana is based on Bien and Bena, which is daughter, so son and daughter. And that's the basis of Bana, which means to build a home with children, with sons and daughters. So that's the basis, that's the verbal basis of bereth. As a matter of fact, when Yosha was saying that upon this rock I will build my mikre, my invitations to be called out and meet, the verb that he used in that statement is bana. And bana is every bit as revealing as the basis of bereth, of the family covenant relationship, as is bayeth, family and home. And, you know, what's the first letter? Kirk and bereth and bayeth.
Mm-hmm. It's B-R.
Yeah, but what's the first letter?
It's family,
bayeth,
home,
right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right. And what does bayeth mean?
his family.
Home and family.
It's family a, it's old days there.
It means home and family. That's all it means.
No.
Yeah, it means home and family. The letter was drawn as a picture of a home with one way in and one way out. So it was a floor plan of a home, was the depiction of it, but the word, the letter itself is named, or the meaning of the letter's name is family and home. It's Aleph Beis.
Let me read something to you. Beth and the roach. The root is the pictograph of the bee, or the bed, is a picture of a tent, but it also represents the family which resides inside the tent. The roach is the picture of a head. Combined these, you have the meaning of family of heads, family.
Right, head of family.
Now, that's the oldest root.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's, you know, if you're looking for something else, I'm sorry, that's what it is. A tent is a house that they lived in ancient, in the days when they were roaming around, so taking care of their sheep. Head is always a person. Head of the house,
right.
Family.
Right. The head shows the eyes, the ears, and the head where the brain is, and it speaks of being able to be observant, to be able to listen, and to be able to think, and therefore respond appropriately. Yeah, there's no secret in this, but you do have to do your homework. You know, you can't simply go to one lexicon and say, "All right, I read the first definition that said contract, and that's my definition, so that's as far as I'm going to go." You know, you need to look up what is the verbal root, what do the letters convey, what other words are comprised of the same letters, particularly if there's a word that has one less letter, what does it convey? And so all you're doing by adding the Rosh to Beyeth is a family to observe, to listen to, and to think about, and then ultimately respond to. That's all you're adding to family to get Beyeth. Larry, speaking of things that that you know, aren't really on our agenda today, but I am talking from the northern suburbs of Cincinnati today, and I've got it from both sides. And I just want to bellyache a little bit because I'm really sick of it. Two doors down from where I am at the moment, it's a Friday, and guess what happens at Muslim households on Friday? They do their prostration prayer to Satan. Yes. So I've got two doors down, a bunch of cars parked out in front of a neighbor's house, where they're paying tribute to Satan, Allah. And because Cincinnati is about as high a percentage of Roman Catholics as any city in America. I mean, the only city that could possibly have a higher percentage of Roman Catholics would be Boston. And I'm not sure which one prevails, whether it's Boston or Cincinnati.
I did not know that.
All of the stores that I would go to. For example, I was out. We have when I was down in Texas, this is really funny, and then I'll talk about the stores here. When I was down in Texas, of course, I was shopping for my son because he wasn't feeling well, and I needed to bring in provisions for him. Do you know what the name of the only supermarket in Waco, Texas is?
Halal's.
Nope.
St. Eve. Mary's.
Eve.
What is it?
Eve.
Eve.
Eve, the derogatory term for Hebrew, for Jew. Eve.
Oh, Hebe. Really?
Hebe. Hebe.
Oh.
H-E-B. Hebe. And so as I went into my local Hebe, because that was the only place, I was searching for matzah. You know, they must have had 500 feet of shelf space to all manner of Easter products.
Easter products.
There wasn't a single box of matzah.
Whoa.
Couldn't find it. Wasn't there. And when I asked about it, they said, "We don't carry any of that Jewish stuff."
You're in Hebe.
Okay. I was in Hebe.
You gotta love irony.
Yep. So here I'm now in Ohio. And of course in those stores, they were absolutely, totally, completely decked out for Easter. And then here I'm in Roman Catholic Ohio. And every story on the news. The last story I saw on the news was this little girl. They were doing this big feature on her because she was being singled out for being so charitable. She was making goddamn Easter baskets to give away to poor children.
Unbelievable. Yeah, this is just, yeah, more of our trash we've been reading about. You know.
Oh, and there's so many people that they're filming that are walking the streets carrying their crosses. No. What is it with people? How could you be so blankety-blank stupid that you would celebrate a holiday named after pagans? I mean, Astarte, Easter, Ishtar, Easter. It's the pagan name for the pagan holiday that God says, what in the hell is wrong with you celebrating a holiday named after the Queen of Heaven and Mother of God? Are you nuts? I mean, why don't you find somewhere in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, or even your goddamn New Testament, where there's a single mention of Easter?
Now, there's one, if you have the fourth edition of the King James Bible, but, you know, that's also the same one that tells you that thou shalt commit adultery.
Of course, but
that's
also
the only one
what they did is they replaced. It's Yosha saying, I have been desiring and looking forward to celebrating the Passover dinner with you. And they replaced it with Easter.
With Easter.
That's like replacing Yahweh's name with the Lord.
Which is something they have
showing,
no problem with.
They
have no problem with that.
They had this new program, and they're talking about, you know, it was last night Thursday is the day that Christ suffered, celebrated his last supper with his disciples. And I keep on saying goddamn, but that's the right term here. My wife sometimes says, why do you say goddamn so much? You really shouldn't swear it. Because it's the most appropriate term to describe these things.
Yeah.
God forsaken, goddamn, God denounced. Last supper. There was no last supper. His name sure as hell wasn't Christ. No, he was celebrating Passover. And if you don't celebrate it as Passover, then you're absolutely wasting your time. You're clueless. You're clueless. I mean, you're worse than clueless. You're a pagan that is committed. Everyone who celebrates Easter is absolutely precluding themselves from entering God's home, from ever seen heaven for being saved. Thank God they are, because I mean, this stuff makes me want to puke. I mean, you've got egg-laying rabbits, you know, Easter bunnies. Why don't you tell me a single place where God mentions a Sunday celebration?
No such. But, well, he mentions Ashura. Ishtar,
yes.
Easter.
Oh, yeah, sure a day.
All
Easter.
In very
absolutely
negative terms. An abomination. It's just a straight-up abomination. Straight
correct
up. You know, we've been looking at Easter and Ishtar and Christmas and so forth. You know, it's the thing that gets me. You know, you could take a guy like my dad that was an atheist. That's who gives a damn about any of it? You know, that was his basic thing. And I get that. He's doesn't care one way or another, right?
Yeah, yep,
if you
I get that
take
too.
Somebody who says,
by the way,
I've dedicated
I get
my life to God, and therefore I work in opposition to him, I don't get that.
I don't get
you
that.
See?
I don't get it. Yeah, how in the world could you be so stupid that you're going to be like the 80% of Americans, and you're going not only to celebrate Easter, you're going to subject your children to Easter. You're going to eat your Easter ham. You're going to have your Easter egg hunt. And you're going to even go to a church on Easter when every bit of that got denounced.
To the last of it. To the last of it. And in more than one place. And in more than one place. I mean, he reiterates this stuff over and over and over.
That's why we spend so much time evaluating when God uses Shaul's name to say that he and his testimony are the plague of death. He says it over and over and over again. And as I've, you know, been dealing with the translations out of Samuel, and it specifically condemned religion. And we looked up what God had to say about Baal, the Lord, and Baal's consort, Astarte, the Queen of Heaven, Mother of God, the basis of Easter. One of the things that became obvious is that Samuel was written, more than 1,000 years before Rabbinic Judaism. God's not denouncing Rabbinic Judaism. In fact, there is no Astarte. There's no Queen of Heaven. There's no Mother of God. There is none of the things that God besmirches about the religion that he hates is part of Rabbinic Judaism. He's not criticizing the religion of the Jews. The religion he's criticizing is Christianity. You know, Islam is not Babylonian. Judaism isn't Babylonian. The religion that's Babylonian is Christianity. With the Trinity, with Christmas, with Easter, with Sunday worship, with the Lord.
Well, you did have
the resurrecting God.
You did have the moon god sin there for a while too. So I mean, it was a bit of both, but certainly the one that most effectively fits the Babylonian Trinity religion is Christianity, and that's why, you know, they got to ask themselves at the end in Revelation why Yad O'Connor is penning, "Get out of Babylon, my people, or you're going to, you know, take part in her plagues." Wow, I mean, Babylon's gone. I mean, he must be talking about something you're doing today.
Oh, right. He makes it really clear when he talks about the little horn coming off the fallen Roman Empire to become a beast that not only tramples the whole world but survives until his return. And the only beast that grew out of the Imperial Rome is the Roman Catholic Church. And, you know, he then goes on to locate it with Rome and of course with Pauline Christianity, and it's the worst of all, the most vile, the most deadly of all enterprises conceived by man. Nothing even comes close to it. It was amazing when I was doing this chapter Psalm 91, that it was talking about how deadly and how many people would fall as a result of Christianity and Islam. And, you know, there are 2.4 billion Christians today. And if you go back just 100 years, there were only 600 billion Christians 100 years ago. I mean,
600
look at the proliferation.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, when God is saying that, Babylon has finally fallen just prior to his return, and when he's saying that Babylon tramples the whole world, ultimately, as an outgrowth of the empire of Rome, this rapid growth of Pauline Christianity in this last 100 years has made that a literal fulfillment.
You know, one of the things that I've noticed, I've taken note of it. You know, back in the 80s, it was not real popular to make Christian television shows or spiritual shows that advanced, you know, Pauline Christianity and so forth. But today, there's entire networks, there's movies, a lot of movies now based on faith. It's just something they're really pushing, you know.
Oh,
and
yes.
As a friend of mine said, you know, they don't call it programming for nothing, you know. And
yeah. You know, there was a big article today on Christians that are being subjugated in China because there's a couple of hundred million Christians that are going to be celebrating Easter. And you say, good God, how could they be so stupid? And then you look at the media and how it is just devoted. Almost every day there's a premier article from a premier publication or news service on just how wonderful Islam is and how it's wholly and completely inappropriate to hold Islam accountable for Islamic terrorism. You know, what happened this past week since the last time we talked? You know, they massacred, 50 people in a stadium in Iraq, and then they killed another 30-some-odd in Belgium?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they weren't Boy Scouts.
Who do we associate that with?
I mean, how do you not associate it with Islam?
I have no clue how you couldn't associate it yet with Islam. I mean, isn't that really what's going on over there now? And isn't it all really funded by the U.S. and the Vatican? I mean, come on.
If a Nazi organization or a Ku Klux Klan organization did that, would they worry about who to associate with?
No, they wouldn't. They'd be real clear about it. They're out promoting Islam.
By the way, speaking against religions, there's on Tuesday morning, 10 o'clock Eastern time, Bill Edwards is on a Clear Channel station, and it's WTKS in Georgia. And Bill Edwards has invited me to speak on the question, is any religion correct?
No.
Done. Say, buddy, why don't we call this show non-secular?
It's a show, huh?
Yeah.
No.
If anyone want to listen in, it's probably streamed somewhere on the internet because it's a Clear Channel station, so that's the biggest indicator in the world.
What time did you say it was? 10 o'clock?
Bill Edwards, 10 o'clock on Tuesday, the Bill Edwards Show out of Georgia, WTKS, and the subject will be, is any religion true? So I'm sure we'll talk about Islam and Christianity and probably a little bit of Judaism, maybe some Hinduism, and, of course, socialist secular humanism. But, you know, simple answer, of course, no. But the proofs are, irrefutable. You know, just imagine how easy it is to expose the fallacies of Islam and Christianity. I mean, just the basic argument, for example, on behalf of Christianity is God died for your sins. Well, if man can kill God, he ain't much of a God. Yeah.
You got to look for the guy that killed him.
Right. And how in the world does somebody claim that they were not only inspired by God, but given the authority for the entire world by God, and could be unchallenged by no one else, and that they alone were inspired by God to bring a message to mankind regarding their salvation that demeans, negates, contradicts everything God had previously said? And you're supposed to believe that individual? How could you be that dumb? It is so obvious that Pauline Christianity is false. You don't really even have to get into the details. But, of course, you get into the details, it's overwhelming. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. Meanwhile, I know, Larry, you were big into this year's political cycle. You probably haven't heard, but the latest sparring between Ted Cruz and Donald Trump is that Ted Cruz's primary a PAC, you know, that they all now raise their money through PACs. His PAC showed a partially naked picture of Donald Trump's wife that was shot for a GQ article. And she said, and the article said something like, meet your new first lady, or perhaps you prefer to vote for Ted Cruz. And Trump took objection to that, as he rightly should. And Ted Cruz then goes on.
For one thing, I mean, I'm just going to throw in 2 cents here. I noticed that Trump kind of runs around with some pretty good-looking women, okay?
Yes.
So I doubt if I would have been offended at the picture, but go ahead. You know.
No, she's the picture of his wife for GQ. I saw it online because I only saw it because I wanted to see if Trump's claim that he had nothing to do to it, which is absolutely bull. It's his primary pack that ran the article, and it says, rather than vote for this new first lady, it's the GQ article. And by the way, it's actually a tasteful picture for a Gentleman's Quarterly. His wife's a beautiful woman. Tries to present her as a slut is the whole idea here.
Wouldn't work that well for me. I live down here in Florida, and the bikini-clad women are all over the beach all summer. So, it wouldn't flip me out too awfully much.
Of course not, because one of the things is God's got no issue with how women dress. The cover yourself up and be modest and wear a tent over your head, that's Paul and Muhammad. But anyway, Trump gives him hell, and Lion Cruz comes back, something like, I'm going to stand up for my wife. You can't insult my wife. You're just a coward, Donald. Well, the next day, or later that day, the National Enquirer came out with a feature article that shows Ted Cruz having an affair with five women. And one of the prostitute, one of the high-priced attorney that works for a conservative think tank in Washington. One was Carly Fiona's second in command of her campaign, and one of them actually serves occasionally as a spokesperson for the Trump campaign. And now it is the National Enquirer, but by the way, the National Enquirer has a whole cadre of investigative detectives who vetted this story, and the last five times that they have outed a political figure for having an affair,
they've been dead on because they're worried about lawsuits. I know that. Yeah.
They have been right. And so I just think it's just marvelous where we have gone in American politics.
Look, when you get to a point where you have an effeminate, maniacal, from what I can tell, narcissistic, Islamic jerk as your president. I mean, just as the president, not yours, not mine. We don't partake in this nonsense.
No,
but when he's pretending to be the leader of a nation, a guy who's essentially really never had a job.
Never had a
job. It's gotten to a point where it's astounding. Okay, now, if you can get any more astounding than that, I guess the only other possibility
to be fair, George Bush was equally a scumbag.
No, he was a daddy's boy that was put into positions. I get that.
That was a drug abuser. That was a conniving liar, and who authorized torture, and committed murder, in my view, because he knowingly, based on what he knew were lies, sent Americans into Iraq and Afghanistan to die, making a bad situation worse. So I view him as a torturer and mass murderer, liar. So, if you want to compare presidents, our last two, well, have been spectacular, and then you compare them Clinton before, who thought, I think I'll do a 21-year intern under in the Oval Office with her kneeling under my desk. That's really presidential.
Well, you know what? It is presidential. Because we can go all the way back to Woodrow Wilson, and it turned out he killed more people than Stalin, That's amazing if you think about it.
I was having that conversation with my son, who is an organic chemist. And typically when I present the evidence that we have for something like the fact that the Spanish flu wasn't Spanish and it wasn't the flu, and that it wasn't something that just happened, but something that was deliberately perpetrated. He said, he says, actually, in the scientific community, it's quite well known that Woodrow Wilson deliberately and knowingly killed over 100 million people by infecting them with a disease that's closer to anthrax than it is to the flu, and he actually cultivated it in Kansas and deliberately sent it to Europe.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's well known, well accepted in the scientific community.
That's interesting.
Yep. Welcome to America. You should be so proud. Now, I do want to return to the 91st Psalm. In our last program here on our Shabbat program, we had just covered the fourth statement. So let me bring us up to date with where we were today and observations, beginning with the 91.5 just quickly. It says, you should never be in awe of or afraid, neither fearing nor revering any aspect of terrorism or dread this darkness, or because of a projectile shot flying by day.
And, where are we at in the 91st?
I just moved forward to 91.5.
About page 22.
Yeah. Yep. And so, this is, I've said this, and I'm so long as it's understood in context, I'm very comfortable saying this. This psalm was written for me. And it was written to provide absolute affirmation that God was going to do the three things that I had asked him to do, that he was going to provide the support I would need to be able to accomplish this task, that we would be working together, that he would be the one that would be promoting the message, and that he would make my family and home a safe sanctuary so that they would not be attacked by Islamic terrorists should I accept this mission of exposing and condemning Muhammad, Allah, and Islam. So I view this as God, because it, here I'm, he's asking me to do this, and he agrees with my request, and I reach into my pocket, and the 91st Psalm is what I pull out. And so, as far as I'm concerned, it was written just for me. But it was also written for you, Larry, and it was written for you, Kirk, and it was written for you, JB. It's written for anybody who is willing to do what Yahweh wants done. If you're willing to advance the message, convey the message he once conveyed, and you look at his Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, he has two messages. And both messages are important. One message is goddamn religion. Let's expose it. Let's condemn it. Let's reveal its sinister nature, and let's expose the consequence, the deadly consequence of the plague. And he wants us to share his plan, his family-oriented covenant relationship, and how we can avail ourselves of it and participate in his family. Those are the two things he wants us to do. And if we do those things, and we do so the way he wants it done, then this psalm is written expressly for you. So as I look at it for me, here he wants Islam, which is the most overtly satanic religion in the world. He wanted it exposed and condemned, but yet most people are afraid to talk about Islam. And I mean, I finally ran out of hosts that would have me on the air because they were threatened by Muslims. Yeah, I received thousands of death threats, but I didn't give a hoot. No matter how specific they were, not even if they wrote my address in the email, not even if they had my picture, not even if they knew exactly where to find me, as many of them did. I didn't care. Meant nothing to me, because I had a promise from Yahweh to protect my home, to make it a safe sanctuary, to protect me no matter what I was doing on behalf of his mission. And so there's no reason to fear it. This whole idea that if you expose and condemn Islam, you're an Islamic phobe, but you've got to be a moron to say that. Anybody?
It's odd. It's very odd, though, that that they're, as an example, one of the things that the, whether it's Bush or Obama, it doesn't matter. It just happens to be Obama now. And the next guy I'll be happy to expose, too. But the Obama administration, I know a girl who was over in Kenya. She was a journalist. She is a journalist, black girl, who's quite an incredible journalist, really. She contacted me and explained that the Obama administration had paid $1 million to rewrite $1 million, and it was led by Desmond Tutu, by the way, to rewrite the Kenyan constitution, and now it is against the law to say anything negative about Islam. Now, you know, you got Desmond Tutu, a bishop from the most satanic church in organization in the world. I think Islam probably takes a back seat to them. I think they fund it and manipulate it. But personally,
in other words, you view the Roman Catholic Church as being more vulgar, more deadly than Islam.
I do, because they hide it better. Yes, I do.
From Yahweh's perspective, it ain't close. I mean, now it's really, really clear. He does not like Islam, and he has a lot of things negative to say about Islam. But his condemnation of Christianity and his labeling of Christianity as the plague of death overwhelms his criticism of Islam. So,
I do know that.
But by the way, the reason the Roman Catholic Church wants that is that they don't want any criticism of themselves either. They know that they're incredibly vulnerable to exposure. The truth destroys that belief system. It rates them of all of their credibility. And so they don't want they want it to be a crime punishable by incarceration for anyone to besmirch any religion.
Sounds like the Middle Ages.
And of course, we all know they outlawed Yahweh's name as well, which is, they did that a couple of years back. But
I'm glad they did.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
well,
I'm glad they did.
It shows who they are, that's for sure.
Yeah. You think Yahweh wants his name spoken in a institution responsible for the deaths of 5 billion souls?
No.
No,
he doesn't.
Do you think Yahweh wants his name associated with any of the rubbish of Roman Catholicism?
No.
No, so I'm glad that they did ban his name. Wholly and completely appropriate.
Oh, sure. I mean, like I said, it shows who they are. But, again, in Yahweh Kanan wrote that they're the very power seat of HaSatan, and they are.
Yeah.
They
it's the seat of Satan. They're married to the Lord, which is Satan, and they're dead.
And while we're involved in this, I mean, just as an example, you go out and you obviously these are the Western powers that are bombing the hell out of these countries, over in the Mideast, whether it's Libya or whether it's Syria, I've seen flyovers. It's an amazing thing. You've got entire cities now that are uninhabitable, and these are pretty large cities. And suddenly the Western powers are easily welcoming these people into these Western countries.
Right.
Now, why in the hell?
How they've resolved the Islamic State in several of the larger cities in Iraq and Syria. Is they've eliminated the city. It's gone.
Yeah, and then why would you say, now we're going to put you on welfare? It's not like the Queen of England is paying for this. She's saying, you little people, figure out how you're going to pay for that, So the stupidity of people in the West following Western leaders who would eviscerate countries and then open their countries to the people that are running from the bombing that they're doing and saying, okay, now we're going to put you on welfare over here. What kind of insane leadership would that have to be?
Yeah, grossly immoral.
Insane.
So this is clear. Don't ever be in awe of or fear terrorism. Don't fear don't even dread the darkness, because there is no projectile that's going to be shot by the day that is going to harm you. It's with all the threats that I got on Islamic terrorism and with all of the killings that Muslims have done. The Islamic State's all over America now. Now, you would think that the guy that wrote the most damning book of Islam and that did thousands more radio shows against Islam than anybody else would be the primary target. And I'm not hard to find. All right.
One would think. Yeah, really, one would think. But obviously,
I'm in good company.
They can't touch you.
No, they can't. you should not ever be in awe of or afraid, either fearing nor revering, the contagious plague, ravaging, robbing, ransacking, and raiding at midday, nor the pestilence, the epidemic, the sickening words prompted by the thorn that travels about without light. Now, you know, when I did this, the project was Islam. And Islam is a criminal enterprise. The first official act of Islam was the Battle of Badr. It wasn't a battle. It was armed robbery. The eighth surah of the Quran, you read it, makes it very clear that Muhammad went to Badr with his militants for the express purpose of stealing the possessions of some businessmen from his former town of Mecca as they were traveling through. And he killed most of them, mutilated their bodies, gloated over it, and stole their possessions. And so Islam was based upon a criminal enterprise.
And of course, the eighth surah is his name. Stealing is good and lawful.
Good. Right. Spoils of war, stealing. Began stealing is lawful and good. And so that is the basis of Islam. And of the 75 territories that Muhammad led, all of them were motivated by booty, by stealing. That was the sole financing of Islam. In fact, Islam spewed out of Arabia within 100 years of Muhammad's death expressly to rob, rape, and pillage the world. So it is a religion based upon ravaging, robbing, ransacking, and raiding. Now, I didn't know at the time, but there would be a second religion to be assailed. And that was the religion that is the pestilence, the epidemic, prompted by the thorn that travels about without light.
And when we say the word thorn, I have an entire couple notes on the thorn. It's not only associated with sin, it's associated with Paulos directly.
Yes, there you go. Yep, Paul was the one who admitted that he had a thorn in his side, and that the thorn in his side was the darkness of a satanic, demonic messenger. You know, if you're a Christian, read the end of 2 Corinthians, and that's what he said. He was demon-possessed. And so the thorn, that is the satanic influence in Pauline Christianity.
Well, what's even funnier is the satanic influence was put there to keep his ego in check.
Mm-hmm.
How
yeah, Saint was working with him. Saint was working to get Yahweh's words out.
Yeah, you know, it's so amazing.
How big is your ego that Satan has to keep it in check?
Yeah, if you have an ego. If you have an ego, you can't work with Yahweh. If you think you're special, if you think you've got something unique to offer, you can't work with Yahweh. You know, the fact that I asked Yahweh, I said, listen, I'm not qualified to do this. I really don't want to do it. I'm not qualified to do it. If you want it done, you know, under the following terms and conditions, like you're responsible, I'm going to be depending upon you, then, you know, okay, we'll do this, but only if I can wholly and completely depend on you because I ain't qualified. Yahweh can work with that, likes to work with that, good to work with that. But if you say, you know, it's obvious you came to me because I'm the most qualified person to do it, the Paul attitude, go away.
Well, of course.
That has no interest in you.
Who else would he pick?
Right.
I'm just and awesome.
The people who have a tremendous ego, who think that they are more important than God, well, they're going to get along great with Satan until they get to be too big for the britches, and Satan's not going to want Paul to be more respected than he is as the Lord. And so to keep Paul from becoming more important than the wannabe God, Satan possessed him. Yep. So the thorn of deadly pestilence, the thorn that was promoting the plague, is the satanic influence in Pauline Christianity. My, oh my. Then this says, 1,000 may fall, prostrating themselves, and possibly even die, being cast down away from your proximity, and many thousands more as a result of your right hand. But this will not strike you. You know, I've got thousands that are bowing down prostrate every Friday at the Mosque of the Americas that is, as the crow flies, 2 miles from here. I have to look at that pathetic thing every time that I drive down Interstate 75. And, you know, just two doors down, 50 yards from where I'm sitting, a bunch of them are prostrating themselves right now at an Islamic home. Yeah, they're prostrating themselves all around. But guess what? Can't touch me. My neighbor across the street was a Muslim. They finally moved out. So they may fall prostrating themselves all around. And many thousands more as a result of your right hand. I look at this as the right hand is what we write with. And the fact is that Prophet of Doom is an extraordinary expose that exposes and condemns the religion of Islam. It leaves Muslims without any excuse. There is, after that book got published, you have to be an idiot to remain a Muslim. Imagine, though, being so enamored, so indoctrinated with this devilish, demonic God that spends all of his time in hell, that has deliberately lied to throughout his Quran, that contradicts himself constantly throughout the Quran, that doesn't get anything right, and that you are going to kill for that God, thinking that if you die killing for this God, that you're going to get an express ticket to a brothel, and you're going to believe that? Allahu Akbar. Wouldn't bet my soul on it.
Well, it's odd, isn't it? I mean, odd, putting it kindly, it's beyond the pale of reason. It's, you know, as we've learned, a lot of things, you know, just things with timing and the yovel and the seven moed mikra and, you know, basic things about Yahweh, like he doesn't want to be viewed as a religious deity,
right.
Calls himself an individual, and then we start looking back at the things we once believed, and they do become a really bad cartoon, as I've said in the past. I mean, one of the big, as an example, you wouldn't need messengers like Malak if you were everywhere all at once, you know, but at one time, we were actually stupid enough to believe God is everywhere, or at least most of us were. I believed it. I mean, that was the natural thought. And because this is what we were told. And then, of course, the more realistic we got, and the more we looked at his words, the more, you know, all religion just became laughable. Having said that, the most, and I think you said Mormonism is worse. It's hard for me to imagine. I've just had, you know, J. Ron and Amy, who's part of our group, who were former Mormons, you know, explained to us the ridiculousness. Apparently, they're all caught up. All these bishops have all these young men walking in who are confessing masturbating, you know, because they saw some girl in a bikini on TV or some strange thing or whatever. That this seems to be a major preoccupation. Well, yeah, just
cut off your hands.
Jaron was saying that it was a major preoccupation with
that
outfit.
Because it is also in Pauline Christianity, you know, fornication and sexual pervasive sexual behavior is condemned in Pauline Christianity. So that the prudism is there. You know, when Yahweh created Adam and Chawa, and they were hanging together, they were naked. God rather liked the male and feminine form. He thinks that he did a really nice job of creating us to be attractive to one another. And I'm going to celebrate that attractiveness. I think women are beautiful. And this perverted notion that women are to hide their bodies, I just think it's part of the lies of
God. It is odd, but having said that, as ridiculous as the Christian belief system is, Islam is actually far beyond that. I mean, it's beyond the pale.
Islam is just so stupid, it hurts. I mean,
it's just all ritual.
It's so stupid, so immoral, so disgusting, so errant, so contradictory, so bogus that you do have to be a fool to believe Islam.
I think it's one of the reasons Yahweh doesn't spend a lot of time on it, because I think
he feels like
people that far gone are just, you know.
Yeah, see, there's
if
a difference.
You're that dumb that you're duped by Islam, he has no interest in you.
Yeah, see, Islam, while it claims that it confirms the Torah and prophets and Psalms, it's a complete nullification of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. It's a complete contradiction of it. It isn't like Islam piled its lies on top of the truth. Now, it names some of the characters in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms to try to garner credibility and to give Allah status, but it isn't a lie piled on the truth. It isn't a counterfeit of the truth. It's just a blend of paganism together. But Christianity has piled their lies right on top of the truth. I mean, Easter is specifically designed to replace Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim. And Christmas is designed to replace Sukkah. That is the purpose of those dates. Sunday is designed to replace the Shabbat. Jesus is designed to replace Yahuwah. Faith is designed to replace trust. Every aspect, Rome is designed to replace Jerusalem. Every aspect of Christianity, its church, is designed to replace the mikra. So it is a lie piled right on top of the truth. It is a corruption of Yahweh's testimony, and I don't think there's anything that angers God more than that. So he has a lot to say about Islam, about Christianity. Of course, where did Paul spend much of his life trying to promote this religion of Christianity in
Rome.
Israel. Yeah, well, also in Israel. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, of course, God despises Rome. He despises everything associated with Rome. And, of course, that was Paul's premier letter to the Romans. So, yeah, it's true. God views Christianity as a much more evil religion than he does Islam. Islam is so overtly satanic, it's so obvious that Allah is Satan, that God doesn't have to spend a lot of time talking about the religion. All he does relative to Islam is talk about the jihadist terrorists that the religion inspires. So, you know, there's the difference. So, this now says, I just want to share this one thing that, because you were talking about he's not a religious deity. I was translating Yashaya 1, and this is, I'm going to read 1:9 and 1:10 and 1:11, because I think that it speaks of specifically what we're talking about. I'll go back a little bit further. It says, he's speaking to Yisrael. It says, your land is lifeless and ruined. Your cities and towns are consumed by fire before you, conspicuously in your presence. Illegitimate, unauthorized, and foreign foes are devouring and destroying. It is accordingly being overthrown and demolished by loathsome and nauseating whores. And the daughter of Sion, now this is now God said, but the daughter of Sion, the conspicuous sign posted to mark the way, is like a sheltered place for living in a vineyard, like an overnight cottage for a watchman in a challenging garden filled with vehemently difficult stubble, like an awakened encampment, which is preserved by being observant. So God is saying, you know, your cities are all gone, but I've still got my Sion. I've still got my signposts along the way. I've still, and they're in the vineyard where the life can be found. I've still got an overnight cottage for a watchman, for somebody that's alert. But it's in a challenging garden. It's filled with stubble and chaff. And I've got an awakened encampment, which is preserved by being observant. Then he says, unless Yahweh of the host of spiritual messengers had not spared and preserved a remnant on our behalf, a few survivors, then like Sodom we would have been, and approaching Gomorrah, we would have been likened and compared. Jews who listened to the word of Yahweh, leaders of Sodom, now he's calling Israel Sodom. So choose to listen to the word of Yahweh, leaders of Sodom. Listen intently, perceiving what is said, and then respond appropriately to the Torah of our God, people of Amorah. For what is it to me? By what means can I be approached? By the multitude, the rabbinic nature of your sacrifices, says Yahweh. I've had more than enough, because I've already completely satisfied the uplifting offerings to rise of rams. And so the lipid fatty tissue of overfed fatlings and the blood of bulls and lambs and goats, I do not want, I do not desire. I take no pleasure in it. You know, this religious stuff, nah, not for me. But if, instead, and on the contrary, by way of this branding, if you should come to approach, to see my presence, who or what was it that sought this beggary from your hand? That's pretty condemning of religion. That's saying, you know, you can do all the religious sacrifice in the world. I don't take any pleasure in it. Who in the world is the one that told you you ought to be doing this? You know, and God's even saying, hey, what do I want with the blood and the fat that's being consumed in the fire and coming up to me like you're doing something for me? No, who told you this was the way to me? Pretty tough, I've got a note.
I have that exact note. I have a note that shows what was written as opposed to what you find in a Biblia.
Oh, man, as I went through this, it was so radically different. And, you know, I'm going to tell you that, I mean, I'm translating Yashaya now, and I went into it with some trepidation. And I went into it with some trepidation because Yashaya's vocabulary is way beyond the vocabulary used anywhere else in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. I can go through, and most passages in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, I can translate them. You know, I'm not fast, but I'm not pokey. But, you know, I can spend 2 hours on just one verse, fully devoted. I mean, 100% focused in Yashaya, because the vocabulary is challenging. But then as I was dealing with this, I was saying, wait a minute, you know, it's always translated, it's la, ma, la. The la means to approach. And ma means what or who or why, I don't know, that's what it means. And so you've got two laws and a ma. And while it could mean for what is it to me, a literal translation is, by what means can I be approached by? By what means can I be approached by the multitude, the rabbinic nature of your sacrifices, says Yahweh. I've had more than enough, because this is the next one. This always says, you know, I've already had my fill, so don't give me any more. This says, it is actually, saba is the verb, and saba's primary meaning doesn't mean I've had more than enough. It means I have completely satisfied. I have fulfilled. I have completed to my satisfaction. So what he's saying is that the uplifting offerings to rise, which is olah, there's nothing burned about it. It's based on the verb allah, which means to rise, to ascend, with an a, not with an lf. It's not the Islamic god. It's one l lamed, not two. And it's that which rises and ascends. So he said, I have had more than enough because I have already completely satisfied my uplifting offerings to rise of rams. And rams is AL, male lambs, leaders of the flock, the upright pillars that form the framework of the doorway. So God said, I don't need any more of this because I've already done it. And then he says, and so the lipid tissue, the fat of the animal, which is unsuitable for eating and is burned up in the cooking fire, of overfed fatlings, of those filthy and gross animals, and the blood of bulls, the blood of lambs and goats, I do not want and I do not desire. Now, who is it? You know, you hear it, it says, but if you should come to approach to see my presence, what was it? Who is it that sought this beggary from your hand? Like they're begging God to accept them because they made this sacrifice. And God says, no. Who was it that told you to do this? What was it that told you to do it? This is remarkably different than your English translations. We're looking at the same words, but we're coming up with wholly different answers.
I've got them side by side so people can look. I mean, you know, there's some pretty simple ones out there, like praise is an example, you know, where, you know, and they'll say praise your righteous laws, and Sadak's not in there. I know they call Torah laws. That's not in there. The word in there was radiate your light, halal. Remember that?
Yeah.
And
this,
you know,
this one is used by Christians. They say, you know, they don't want, God doesn't want any more of these burnt sacrifices. So, you know, what are you doing celebrating Pesach, you know, and Passover and that sort of thing? He says, I don't want any more of it. Well, what he's saying is, I've already fulfilled it. I've done it. And so, you know, I've dealt with the offerings of the rams. But then it's this, the thing that he says, I don't desire and I don't want is the lipid tissue, the fatty tissue of the fatlings, the blood of bulls, lambs, and goats. No, it's so powerfully different than what's conveyed. And the only difference is, if you're going to be accurate in translation, you have to know who the speaker is, what the speaker cares about, what God wants, what he is asking, what he's presenting. And you've got to know that he's consistent. And if there's a verb that means to fulfill, to completely satisfy, and it's written in first person, and it's God speaking, then, you know, he already satisfied. He completed the offering of the lamb. Nothing more to do. It was even written in the perfect tense. So nothing more to do. I did it once. I don't need to do it anymore. So don't pretend like you're doing me a favor.
You know,
I'm sorry. Yeshaya 1 chapter 9:10-11. Or did I misunderstand?
Oh, that was I just read chapter 1 of Yeshaya. I translated it right from the beginning. That was 9:10-11 and 12 that I just read to you. You know, okay. If you go to the beginning of Yeshaya 1. It begins. This is the revealing communication of Yeshayahu, and it's actually written in the great Yeshayahu scroll as Yeshayahu, not just Yeshayah. So I figured that the man ought to know his name, right? Ought to know how to write his name, and he writes it as Yeshayahu. It is probably Yeshayahu, but I really don't have an issue with the UW. Sometimes it's conveyed that way. You know, the son of Amos, which is trustworthy and steadfast, whereby compiled a revelation and written prophetic record of the covenant relationship concerning Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, which is boldness and empowerment, or from Yah. Yothan, which means Yah is perfect, complete, and upright, lacking nothing. And Azaz, which means he has grasped hold. And Yachiz Yah, which is typically rendered Hezekiah, which is I am strengthened by Yahweh. Rulers of Yahuda, related to Yah. So, you know, in the context of this whole thing, it's the opening statement reads, Yashayahu, salvation is from Yahweh via the son of Amoz, the trustworthy and steadfast one. Asher regarding the beneficial relationship between Shazon, written prophecy, and Jerusalem, the source from which teaching, instruction, guidance, and direction regarding reconciliation flows. The son would confirm and uphold the account Yahweh established in his Torah and through his prophets, affirming that he and they were trustworthy and supportive, nourishing and steadfast, and thus unchanging in Jerusalem. Now, that's the first list of names. Now, the second list of names, we are told that Yahweh inspired Yashayahu to speak in the days of four kings. Their names reveal Uzziahu, boldness and empowerment are from Yahweh because Yotham, Yahweh is perfect, complete, and upright, lacking nothing. Azaz, he who grasps hold of this reality is Yakith Yah, strengthened by Yahweh, growing firm and resolute. You know, fairly powerful. Then the next sentence is, listen, spiritual realm, and choose of your own accord to pay attention and respond, material realm, because Yahweh has spoken. And you might say, well, why does the spiritual realm need to listen? Well, they're soldiers. They're implements. They're messengers. They're envoys. They need to know what Yahweh wants to accomplish for them to do it. And in the material realm, we should choose to listen because, by golly, it's Yahweh who is speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And he begins, he says, I rear children, lifting them up, helping them grow, enabling them to be great. And I raise them, taking them to a higher place. But they actually rebelled against me. That's strong language. Then he says, a cow, it's a bull or oxen, is from Shur. One who looks, one who sees what's around him, one who views the world from the proper perspective and pays attention, is aware of and recognizes the one who gave birth to him. So if you're observant, you know who your creator is. Even a cow knows its mother. But this says, this is a cow, one who looks, sees around him, views the world from the proper perspective, and pays attention and is perceptive, is aware and recognizes, yada, knows and respects, is familiar with and acknowledges the one who created him. Ah, but the ass. But the ass, the chamor, a donkey, a stubborn domestic beast of burden, it's from Chamutz, a class of lowly and impoverished people who are impressed, who are leavened, embittered, and violent, cruel, wrong, and unjust. His Lord!
So the ass
knows his Lord. That's funny. So the one, the cow, recognizes the one who gave him birth, and an ass, his Lord, his Baal.
Ain't that so? I mean, it's right there. You know, I had a woman. I did a note on Kippurim this week, and but we're in this same realm here. And basically, what she did, she says this: I appreciate the words you've written, but I have to say I'm a bit confused. According to the Torah, as translated from Hebrew, Yahuah instructs us to afflict ourselves on Yom Kippur. Simply said to her, so you're taking Kippurim, which is based upon kafar, which means covering, which describes the Ark and the Covenant and the mercy seat. Mm-hmm. And basically, and the word anah, as we know,
mm-hmm. Right?
And you're taking a word that has all these, you know, respond to a summons, you know,
right. Yeah,
receive
answers, an
speak truthfully, make a declarative statement,
respond to the invitation.
Yeah, and you're taken to the low road, and yet in this very very note, it says you're not to do any of the work of the Malacca. And the Malacca was all over Yahusha. I said, so how is it that you know, putting yourself into a state of disturbed and worried and anxious feeling and, you know, feeling raped and violated and low and all this is, somehow, how does this reconcile a relationship? You know, there was no answer. She went right to, well, in the Hebrew, of course. And, of course, all she's done is had some rabbi or somebody who claims to speak, you know, Hebrew tell her this, and she just believed it. This is how religions are born.
Yeah, but that, again, is the difference between knowing and understanding. You can know that Anah can be translated afflict. It's translated correctly afflict probably 10% of the time, maybe less. 90 to 95% of the time, the primary and secondary meaning of Anah prevail, and it means to respond and answer. That's the primary meaning, and that's the meaning of Anah 90% of the time. So you look at the context. It's the day of reconciliation. The day of reconciliation is a mikra, which means it's an invitation to be called out and meet with God. The purpose is to reconcile the relationship, and you say that you can answer the summon and come into the presence of the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light, or you can afflict yourself.
Well, no, we see, right? We see the answer right there because we see the fulfillment.
Yourself.
I put the fulfillment right in the note. I will return to this one-third in the fire. I'll refine them as one refines silver and test them as one does gold. They will summon my personal proper name, and I will answer them. And I will say, you are my people, and they will say, Yahweh is our God. Now, there it is.
And answer them was from Anah.
Yeah,
you see, he didn't say I will afflict them.
No, he's not going to be afflicting his family. And then I just put right under that again, Korah, where it says, do not perform any of the service of the heavenly messenger on this life-sustaining, empowering day. Indeed, is the day of reconciliation, Yom Kippurim, for you to be pardoned and forgiven in what? The presence of Yahweh, your God. Well, we just saw where it happened in Zechariah. And so he says, this is what it's for. This is what it's about. And so suddenly, what, he's afflicting them? He's afflicting their family. Lovely.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know that that 10% of the time, it's possible to translate a non-afflict.
I understand that.
Sure. But if you don't understand the context of the discussion and how it relates to other things that God said, if you translate it afflict, you'll be wrong in context, and you'll be wrong in the overall connections that God makes to the saying. You know, that's why theologians and scholars are so deadly. The difference between knowing and understanding. You know, when you're going to translate Yahweh's word, the single most important aspect of translating Yahweh's testimony is knowing Him.
I mean, Yahweh just said right there, the purpose is to be pardoned and forgiven in the presence of Yahweh, your God. And then they show right there in Zechariah where it actually happens that way. Literally.
Right.
Which is the
point.
What did
Yahweh say? I read the beginning of Yeshayah here. Didn't it say that I reared them, I lift them up, I took them to a higher place? Now, so how could God want you to debase yourself, to afflict yourself, to lower yourself, if His whole purpose is to raise us up? Wouldn't you be working against God?
Yeah, you'd be. What you have just done is turned Yahweh into the Lord, to the monster.
Of course, yeah, bow down.
Beat you down, and he's akin to Mao and Stalin and all that.
So I'm going to tell you, Rabbinic Judaism, they've got it right. They got it right.
What
do you mean,
the Lord?
No, it's just like Roman Catholicism outlawing Yahweh's name. That's the appropriate thing for them to do.
Right. Oh, I see.
The appropriate thing for Rabbinic Judaism, where men, rabbis, are exalted and God is unknown, it's the perfect thing in Rabbinic Judaism for man to afflict themselves.
I mean, how straight up do you have to be? You have all that in the Kippurim section, by the way. I'm not, you know, it's real obvious that this is what he says this day is for. This is actually what happens in the fulfillment Okay, so it's literally what happens. You know, this is exactly what he says the day is for. And so you show it to somebody, and they go, yeah, but, you know, if you look at the Hebrew, the words are flicked. You know, not
words
knowing.
Enough. If you look at the Hebrew,
I know the word is
enough. Look at the primary definition of enough, and then apply it to the context.
And even look at the secondary. If you could apply, I'm going to afflict my people. Well, he's afflicting the people that are attacking his people. If you want to call it affliction in that sense of the word.
Yeah, the primary definition is answer. The secondary definition is respond. They're related concepts. The other one is to make a profession, to make a proclamation. Another one is to sing out the lyrics of a song.
Yeah, but a proclamation would be, Yahweh is our God. That would be a proclamation.
Yeah, Yahweh is our God, and Yahweh I will trust. Anything like that, or Yahweh, here I am. You know, that's basically what my son and I, we celebrated Pesach on Sunday evening, and I understand that Sunday evening was before Pesach, even if you choose the earlier of the times. Talk to Yahweh about it. He had no problem with it. We enjoyed it perfectly, and we began it by saying, you know, here we are. We're answering your invitation. Thank you for providing this. It's wonderful to celebrate it as father and son. You've celebrated as father and son. It's a marvelous thing to do, and we are here responding to and answering your invitation. We appreciate this doorway to life. And, you know, the first thing my son said was that, you know, it's marvelous that here we are celebrating Pesach, and we're doing so with matzah, with un-yeasted bread, dipping it into the olive oil and the bitter herbs, which means that Yahweh is not even considering. He doesn't even want to have the possibility of us becoming immortal without being perfected. So he's saying, I'm not going to wait the 24 hours for you to begin matzah as part of Pesach. We're going to make matzah part of Pesach so that at the same time that you are becoming immortal, you're becoming perfected. He says, that's marvelous, because otherwise you could put yourself in a 24-hour limbo position if it was your first time to celebrate this.
Well, plus there's a picture. There's a picture there, too, right? I mean, you know, just right there in the food where you got the bitter herb on top of the lamb, and then you've got the... Then you've got the matzah, because what happened right after this bittersweet fulfillment, his, and I like the word fulfillment over sacrifice, I really do, and then his soul immediately goes to where? Matzah, to perfect us.
Yeah.
So you've got that picture in your food you're eating. I mean, it's right.
And by the way, I also had another picture. My son was really sick. I mean, he was so sick, he was trying to check himself into the hospital. The first thing I did is pick him up as I took him to the hospital. And fortunately, I took him to a doctor who was Johnny on the spot and said, yeah, you've got some serious problems here. I'm going to begin with injections for anti-nausea, for steroids, for anti-inflammatories, for antibiotics, and for pain. And then I'm going to give you prescriptions for all these things because you're in a bad way. And this was now... because I flew in Saturday morning, and that's when we did it Saturday morning. This was Sunday evening. And, you know, when I flew in, he couldn't drink Gatorade without throwing it up. And here he was, drinking wine, eating unleavened bread with olive oil and bitter herbs, and eating grilled lamb that we picked up at a Longhorn Steakhouse. And we had the best time. I mean, it's just like he had this almost miraculous transformation. It was one of the most enjoyable times we've ever had together. You know, the healing and the life and the joy that is part of this festival.
Amazing.
And, you know, there's nothing, there was no part of it that was a sacrifice. You know, we weren't sacrificing anything.
No, you didn't beat yourself up or anything. I get that, you know. And I just, for the life of me.
We took the whole thing very lighthearted. My son and I have really a very similar approach to, you know, he's a bit more cautious than I am. I'm a little more just outgoing and, you know, yeah, we're buds. And you know that I'm I'm flawed, but you seem to like rascals. So, you know, here I am, and it's great to be with you. And he's almost there. He's a little bit like, gosh, I want to make sure that you know, I don't screw this up. And very slight difference there. You know, still a little bit of a am I doing this right?
Well, once we understand it's for the purposes of understanding, and we do understand it, there's no real way to screw it up. I mean, really.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess.
Yeah, he was talking about
the
first time
he
celebrated Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, that on the first night as he was having his lamb, they provided him with a salad. He had actually brought matzah and olive oil to the restaurant. Called the restaurant in advance because he knew they would have grilled lamb. He says, your lamb on the menu doesn't say grilled. I want it grilled like this, and then I want to bring my own olive oil and bitter herbs, and I want you to provide a vessel that I'm going to bring my own matzah. And he called the restaurant and said, this is what I'm going to be doing, and I want you to accommodate me. And they said, yeah, we'll absolutely accommodate you. And he had a salad, and there were some croutons on the salad. And he was just so nervous that, you know, he didn't realize the croutons had yeast in them until he had eaten one. And he says, oh, my gosh, I'm going to be now in the crouton line. He said, I was so glad that the next year I could celebrate matzah and do it without eating a crouton.
There you go.
I had a lot of those instances where I had to go to Heap
four times for him in one day because of various things that he felt better than anything he wanted me to buy. And I said, you know, having to go into Heap and deal with all that Easter stuff four times in one day, I'm sure I'm going to be in the crouton line now, waiting behind all the other crouton eaters.
That just makes you a good father.
Oh, my.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just another example of how we can't do the Torah because, I mean, for one thing, we're supposed to get rid of all the leaven in the land. I mean, you know, and we
right.
can't do that. We have to leave the work up to the Malacca again,
right.
You know, and
right.
That's what I would tell people. Everybody that, especially, there's a lot of new people this year and unpopular. There really is, and
mm-hmm.
and what I would tell people is that you know, this is not a religious event. It's just there for the purposes of understanding.
It's a family get together.
It's right. a family get together. It's a celebration of our relationship with Yahweh. And
we can't do the work of the Malacca.
No,
we can't.
Well, Yahweh's already done the work. He did it perfectly. We just enjoy the benefit. All he asks us to do is to meet with him on this time. So don't worry about how you do it or anything else. Just enjoy celebrating this time with him.
You know, as Terry and I sat down and had Pesach meal, and we're sitting there drinking wine, and we've got the lamb and the bitter herbs and everything, and
what do you guys use?
And she turns to me and says, well, he sure asked us to do a lot, doesn't he?
What do we use
for bitter herb? I use milk.
I like the taste of rosemary, and rosemary has a bitter taste, so I like rosemary. And then there's a McCormick and a number of spice companies have herbs de Providence. And there, it's just an assortment of fairly bitter herbs, and I use the two of them. But is there a right and wrong answer? Probably not.
No. Well, you can go to the grocery store and just taste a few of them until you find one that's awful, and that's it.
Well, high stops in the
middle. By the way, bitter doesn't have to be awful. You know, bitter doesn't.
Well, I mean, it's bitter. I mean, you can taste it as bitter, and you go, ah.
Yeah, but you know,
I'm gonna say I love bitter stuff, so
I do too.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, it's I am positive by bitter herbs. God is not wanting us to dip our matzah into something that tastes awful.
Anyway,
it's not the day for a party. Yeah, and so the olive oil is a soothing, smoothing kind of a taste, and it takes the edge off the bitterness, so it's just now a tasty olive oil. By the way, in the Yashaya segment that I'm just now translating, the first time I've actually seen olive oil presented as a healing ointment. It was talking about the open sores of the Israelites, and he says, you know, you haven't, they're still filthy, they're oozing, and you haven't bothered to clean them, nor have you anointed them with olive oil to promote healing.
Which would be the ruach.
Oh, of course. You know, I've we've always said that olive oil is symbolic of the ruach because it's the purest form of light. It was the oldest living tree. It is nourishing to eat, and also because it was a medicine, was used to heal. The first time I've actually seen it in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, actually presented as healing. And God says, you know, you haven't cleaned the wound. And you haven't bandaged it, and you haven't used olive oil as a medicine. So yeah, it's got all of the. It's just the first time that I saw the affirmation, big smile, because I've been saying it for years, and you know, there's a lot of things you can just naturally extrapolate from olive oil, and so why it was chosen by Yahweh as the symbol. There it was.
Can I ask you, well, can I share something with you?
Sure.
When we were reading in Passover, during Passover, the Pesach section, and I found in the section, I think it was Exodus 12, it was Names 12, Shemos 12, 13, and it was very odd because all of a sudden there's plague, and every time now that I've seen the Gospel or Negev, I think about plague of death. And then you go to about 12:23, and you get Negev Meshith, which is the plague of death. And then along that, I looked in the Brown Drivers, and it says, as a parallel, go to Yirmiyah 51, and it says, figuratively of Babylon, of Babylonian, or the noun for destruction, like the plague of Babylon. And I'm going, boy, you know, he never misses a trick to talk about this plague of death. I mean, we're
right there. Yeah, but right tying to Babylon. Can you email me that link? Because that's the
sure,
whole reason I'm analyzing right now. Yashayahu is to make the connection between the whore that we met in Shamuel, and then again in Proverbs 6 and 7, and that now we're seeing associated with Pauline Christianity. I want to make the connection between the whore, Babylon, and Satan. And
yeah.
So that's done adroitly through the first 14 chapters of Yashayahu. But, you know, that's a lot of territory to cover.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
If you send me the other link,
look it
that
up, make sure I'm that, I have it right here in my little handwritten notes, but I'll find it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've not seen the plague directly associated with Babylon. I've seen it directly associated, of course, so many times with Paul, with Shaul.
Well, I was expecting it to be, you know, talking about the plague of death because of the religion of Mithraim. And then all of a sudden, and it talks about Babylonia, figuratively of Babylonia. And I'm going, that they shouldn't, you know, why does that one link to that one that links to that?
It's interesting, too, because there'll be three metaphors here in Psalm 91 that God is associating with the religions. And one is a serpent, one is a dragon, and the other is a lion. And so if you look at where is the serpent, where is the dragon, where is the lion presented, they're all satanic metaphors, and they're associated with Egypt and with Babylon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I looked all those up and came to the same conclusion. Yeah. But don't touch him, because we ain't got there yet. That's the fun part for next week.
Yeah, can I mention something here to JB?
Sure.
You still on there, JB?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, I wanted to thank you for that that fine work you did on the Book of Enoch, exposing it for the Hebrew campfire story that it obviously is.
Oh,
great
God.
Job.
Oh, I can't wait.
I think Grace's right. It's more like the Quran than anything.
Oh, that's what
yeah,
I said.
I didn't know. Yeah,
I had a friend that said, oh,
really,
no, it doesn't read
really
like
a Quran.
It reads totally like a Quran with the ridiculous stories and the giant
those
people.
Very primitive thinking.
Yeah.
Very primitive thinking. Yeah.
Insane. Yeah. I mean, the wind blows the stars around at night. No.
Oh yeah!
Wow!
The wind comes from a doorway in the heavens, and it's caused by the lightning from the stars. Oh goodness!
No, I'm saying we all need to pitch in, get a boat, and go look for this mountain of sapphires.
Yeah, you know, I want to find
oysters. Don't come from mountains, type of thing.
Of the 5,000 foot tall man.
Yeah!
Wow. Yeah, I started doing the conversion on that one. I'm going,
maybe not.
Like, the tallest in history is a guy who was around 8-foot something, and he suffered horrible back problems his entire life.
Oh, yeah. The structure of man, you get even approaching 7 feet, and we're an unstable creature. And 8 feet is a miserable condition for a human. You know, right around 6 feet is about as tall as a man can be without having ill effects from it. Still between 6 and 6.5 feet, and this was a 4,500
of a mile tall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, this is just what. Of course, they'll say, "Well, that was a misprint. That's just a misprint. They didn't mean to say that."
Yeah.
And,
that
was
then
a
the whole thing is a misprint because
which is
one misprint. Of the things that it has in it is that its account of the flood has Enoch as the operative individual, even though he was gone, and the whole story. The story is completely different.
No, I understand that. I mean, it's just outrageous. I mean, come on, lightning comes from the stars. I mean, whoa, guys. You didn't know very much, did you? You're not showing us anything here. In other words, there's no prophecy, either forward or back.
No, so there's no accurate prophecy. There's no...
There's a lot of inaccuracy.
Prophecy, prophecy from Yahweh, it's both Haya and Bo that he uses, so it's that which is to come and that which has been. Both have to be accurate and inerrant. And Enoch gets history wrong. And if you get history wrong, then God, if there's any mistake in history, you are as failed as and deadly and misguided and presumptuous as a prophet as if you got a prediction wrong.
Well, even the
example writes his
you point out that Yahweh's deadly accurate when it comes to science. The science here is that whole section he did on the science of the stars blowing around, and it's got to do with how angry God is or whatever. It was just so.
One thing I wish I could find more on was I've read several places where they cite this, but I haven't been able to find any proof. Is supposedly around the 200 to 400 BC era, the whole pseudo-biographical thing where people would write from the perspective of historical figures, apparently that was quite a trend, but I've not been able to find any proof of that. I keep reading, everyone's like, that happened a lot, but I can't find any examples. I wish I could find that.
Yeah, if you have a Dead Sea Scrolls Bible, well, they do not have Enoch, which they view it as apocryphal. What they will say is that there was one copy of Enoch, a few fragments of Enoch, but that it was very popular at the time for people to write under the name of a historical personage.
Famous historical figure.
To gain attention for themselves and to appear credible. When in fact there is no actual tie to
it. Would be called a pseudonym.
I've been looking for evidence of that.
I could use the pseudonym Yada, and I'm not deceiving anybody. If I use the name Yahweh or Yashaya or Enoch, then I'm deceiving people. Yeah, I'm deceiving people.
Sure.
Yeah, and that's
the equivalent of me writing
a
book from the perspective of George Washington, where I'm driving around in a Porsche.
Correct. Yeah, It is. If you're using someone's name to mislead, to get them to believe that, because Enoch speaks in first person, so and Enoch is back there at the days of the flood, so it's obviously a fraud of somebody claiming to be Enoch, and so I guarantee you, Enoch didn't do any of those things, nor did he write a book.
Yeah, no. We are told very, very little about Enoch in Bereshit. You know, we told how when he was born, how old he was, that he walked with God,
and then
he was no more.
Incidentally, I was listening to an old Shattering Myths where I think a fellow named Josh called in, and he was asking about he asked you if you were going to be one. This is not going to be popular, he said. He said, could you possibly be one of the two prophets? And you didn't laugh. You goes, no, it's, of course, ridiculous. I'm not going to be one of the two guys at the end. You know, obviously, one of them's Eliyah, because it says that, and Malachi. He just straight up says it, you know, that he's got work to do right before the return of Yahweh. So one of them is no doubt Eliyah, and I think the other one is Enoch.
Was harvested, taken to heaven without physically dying. And Enoch is the other person that was taken to heaven without physically dying. Enoch is typically thought to be the other person, but we don't know that Enoch is going to be the other individual. You know, it could be Moshe, for example.
We don't know that, but I think it is Enoch. Well, that's right, because nobody saw Moshe pass away either.
Moshe does have a burial site, and he did have a funeral. So But just because we look at Enoch and we're looking for a parallel of somebody who hasn't died, and you know, that's how we come up with Enoch as the second person. I think it's the most logical, but we don't know that is for certain.
Well, we do
know
for certain one of them is
someone who
I can tell you for certain it isn't going to be JB, me, or Larry or Kirk.
No.
Because we are not... we're not Yehudi. Yeah, we are not. And so it's not going to... Now, you could say, all right, well, Enoch wasn't either because he preceded Abraham.
Correct.
And Abraham was in the beginning of it. But... I
could
tell you.
Line at that point.
Yeah, I not going to be me. The most interesting, by far, would be Dode.
Oh, I would love to see Dode.
Yeah, I just love.
Well, you know what? I'm sure
when you roll around with Dode and let them do their thing.
I like the way Eliyah presents.
I would love to see Dode and
a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah,
I think
Eliyah doesn't
say
no. That's one of the things we were talking about today on the observation show. Yahweh doesn't debate. He's not going to have a debate with you. He will state his position. He will condemn the opposing position, but he isn't going to sit there and do Q&A from the audience. He just doesn't do debate.
Oh, by the way, us Hendrix Myers, we're German Jews. I mean, we absolutely
okay,
were.
Okay, so you could be the guy.
That's a confirmed fact.
You could be the dude.
Yeah, well, you know, I wasn't just because I wasn't raised Jewish. It doesn't mean that it's the blood's obviously there. I mean,
Grandpa
Hendrix Meyer killed a guy in a card game. I told you guys this in Colorado. Hightailed it to Iowa, shortened his name to Hendrix, denied the hell out of doing it, and when my grandpa Hendrix died. They found the birth certificate, and it said Hendrix Meyer right on it.
So,
I mean, everybody was black hair, brown eyes, everybody in that family, with the exception of my dad, who had blue eyes for some reason. But the rest of them all had black hair and brown eyes. And and I'm guessing that, you know, they were definitely with a name like Hendrix Meyer.
I'm glad. I mean, that's a good thing. And of the group of people that I know, I think you'd be the best at it.
Yeah.
I think you'd be the best at it.
Yeah.
You would. Because all you do, every time, your response is always the same. What did Yahweh have to say about this?
Well, yeah. I mean, I can't think for Yahweh. Right. This woman on my page can, obviously, that wants to debate the note, because, yes. And she goes on to say, we don't starve ourselves. That's why we sleep 8 of those hours, and by night we can eat again. He's loving. He doesn't want us to starve ourselves.
Just hard to have a party when you can't eat.
Yeah, well, you know, not only that, I mean, he calls all his Moed Mikra Chag. I mean, they're all, they're all
party
festival
feasts. Party hardy.
Yeah, I don't know how in the world you have a festival feast with no food. I mean, I've never even heard of that. Not anywhere. But then that's where, you know, when you get down into religion, that's where it just
there's not a prescribed menu for reconciliations. And
yeah,
although,
that was another
I think
thing.
Okay. So you wonder, okay, so why wouldn't there be a prescribed menu for reconciliation? I think there's a reason for that. What is happening on the fulfillment of Yom Kippur, on the Day of Reconciliations?
Well, they're being attacked.
Okay, but the Israelites are being attacked. But what's even more important than the Israelites in attack? What is the actual fulfillment of the Day of Reconciliations?
They recognize that Yahweh is their God.
Yahweh returns.
He's returned. They're recognizing.
Do you think that Yahweh was going to provide? I think Yahweh's going to provide the meal.
And what it says right here, moreover,
he's going to be here. I think, you know, his nature is, I'll bring the food. I'll bring the food.
I'm not going to tell you what
you should be eating and drinking on Yom Kippurim, because it's the day that I'm coming. I'm going to bring the provisions.
I'll provide it.
I'm going to bring the provisions. That's why I think he doesn't specify it.
Well, he says right there in Zechariah 14:14 in the fulfillment, moreover, Yehuda will eat food in Yerushalayim. And then that's just the way it's going to be. Why would he even put that in there? Why would he even put it in there? He doesn't put it in there for Teruah, does he?
No.
I mean, come on.
No, it's because he's going to be providing it.
No, you're probably right. And I bet it's going to be good meal.
It's
going to
be darn good.
I grill a pretty good lamb. I imagine his food's going to be better, though.
Oh, yeah.
Especially
yeah, I do.
For people who've been starving for and probably under great a siege for quite some time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You betcha. Oh. Yeah, he's going to provide the campfire, too.
Yeah, I just had to point that out. It was just so preposterous. I thought, you're reading right here. You're reading the note right here.
Right.
Read it again.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, he's going to bring the food. They'll be eating in Jerusalem. And so how are they going to eat in Jerusalem? He's bringing the provisions.
Yeah, how are they going to eat there?
That's why he's
going to have them break the Moed.
There is no place where it says that Yom Kippurim is a fast.
No.
It just doesn't specify the menu. That's because Yahweh's going to bring it. And who knows? You know, it'd be fun to find out what he thinks is tasty. I don't know.
Something tells me lamb will be part of that menu.
Yeah, you know, what's going to be really interesting, I think, is this transition in our nature on these days, because I think we'll be celebrating these days forever. As parties, and therefore, the only way for us to eat is for us to transition from energy to physical.
Yeah, to physical form, exactly.
Right.
Which is going to be a lot of fun.
I mean, it's going to be fun,
and we don't have anything to worry about at that point. There's not a care in the world, as they say,
not in
the universe at that point. Just not a care.
Right.
None of us really know what that feels like.
No.
I mean, we could almost get there, but
can you imagine
to
being
really
able to
know
transform
what that feels
energy
like.
Into a physical body that's absolutely perfect?
No, no.
You have to eat whatever you want to eat, and you don't grow fast. You don't have to, you know, pump weights or.
Yeah, I'm going back for thirds, man. I mean, that's
I'm going back for thirds. This is really tasty. You know, I don't really like that wine. I think I'll have another glass. Hey, Larry, can you open another bottle for me?
I'm going to tear it up, pal. I'm going to tell you that because you don't have a care in the world about anything.
Right.
How about your health?
You'll be explaining what, you know, you might even have your own universe, or maybe we'll have a universe collectively together, and we're off exploring it, and we're experimenting in it, and we're just having a grand old time, and we create something even more interesting than the platypus. Maybe it's platypus meets kiwi. And we're saying, no, I got to show you a picture. You know, I took a picture of what Larry created. You are not going to believe this.
Yeah, I created the galaxy that had, you know, Kirk as the IT guy.
Yeah,
now, imagine this place. I mean, imagine, Kirk, imagine this place.
Pretty
yeah, the rivers really did flow with Brewski.
That's right. It really does.
Yeah.
And guess what? We don't have any technology there.
That's the part of making it.
Yeah, tall, tall stories to tell. Yeah, just giggling and having a great old time.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what it's going to be. But I understand why Yah was at the point where he says, you know, I've reached down to you people, I've shown you the answers. You don't want to accept the answers. There's these few people that do, and they're sharing these words. And you know, sometimes I think many of us, especially people that are new, can get really down on themselves. They don't think they're doing as much as they can, or they don't think that they've learned enough, or, you know, and that's good to keep learning. I mean, that's what this
right.
whole process is about.
And it's good to do.
Yeah, believe me, I love it. And the more, now that we're back into the words, you know, that you're not doing a three-hour show every day, and we're back into looking at new words and new passages and seeing new things exposed and so forth, we're really uncovering, you know, some nice gems. And I mean, these gems are just, well, all we're doing is presenting them to people. That's all we're doing. And it isn't that hard, especially in the realm of social media where you got copy and paste and everything else, you know. I mean, it's a pretty simple thing to do. And so, you know, these words are just echoing throughout eternity, and people can either latch on to those words, or they can be apathetic, which most people are going to be, or they're going to be in complete opposition.
Larry, have you ever confronted anybody that you were sharing your eyewitness testimony with that knew and understood more than you did, and that said, you know, Larry, it can't mean that because this really is the meaning of the word, and you go back and you study it and say, oh, man, you really got a point here. Have you ever been stumped?
Honestly, no. Because I've always presented Yahweh's words and put it in context. I've got this woman telling me.
Yahweh doesn't allow it. So long as you're reliant on him and using his words, he's not going to let you.
I can tell you hundreds of times. You want to talk about the 91st Psalm, and this is true. This is, I don't know hundreds, but certainly dozens of times. Mm-hmm. I've been in debates, and the guy says, and I've got my notes up, and I'm reading a note, and because I go to my notes, you know, I know where to find these things, and I'm reading my note, and the guy makes the statement right on the line I'm on that totally dispatches his. And does away with his statement. And I just paste it and put it in. And you go, that wasn't even, talk about deliver the enemy into your hand. I'm telling you, it happens. And, I don't want to make a big deal out of it. I don't make a big deal out of those things because I've come to expect them at this point. I really have. I've come to expect it. And so, it's right there. Our enemies are delivered right into our hands. And I'm sure if it gets down to, say, lopping off the heads of Larry and JB and Kirk and Yada and, we'll say what needs to be said at the time, and it'll be put right in our mouth. We know what to tell these people. Yep. We know how to handle them. Yep. And there's really nothing they can do to us in the long run. I mean, there's just, so what? So I can't imagine somebody, we're going to kill you. You know, I doubt if I'd be really pleased.
Okay. Well, I've got thousands of death threats, and, you know, after a while, it's just, come on, go bother somebody else.
You know, some empty-headed idiot, you know, that's you know, following his Lord's will, you know, is going to what, kill us? I mean, they can't kill us, for one thing. And by the way, I mean, our physical bodies are going to die anyway, so what are they doing exactly?
Yeah,
not much.
In fact, I always looked at the 91st Psalm. I really didn't care and never really did pay attention to the parts of the 91st Psalm that were about my personal longevity to be able to see this mission through. Never did care about that because, you know, short in my life, I'm the happiest guy in the world. I mean, I go directly to Yahweh and get to explore the universe. No skin off my nose. Although I've come to realize that being here is really a lot of fun, and I've only got such a short period of time that we can still be here and be a family together and learn together and share together, that I'd rather actually stay around for a while. You know what we're going.
By the way,
it's
kind of interesting the way you were approached, because I think that the bigger picture was yada yada and ITG and observations and shattering myths and so forth. I mean, I'm sure you've come to realize that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and the only thing you weren't was a hypocrite, which is, okay, I can expose Islam for the ridiculous joke, you know, that it is, show where it's written in the wrong person, it's all discombobulated, it's historically inaccurate, and all these other things, and you can, you know, you invested a hell of a lot more time than I ever could have reading that. I mean, you had to take a shower every night or something.
Oh, I know. It's just disgusting.
Yeah, you know. But, even reading it, it's just like reiteration of the same material over and over. I mean, it just, you go, damn, it never gets any better. It's always ridiculous. But what the one thing you did was that allowed you to say, well, let me look at the translations in this book I'm following.
Yeah.
And once you did that, and I think this was your, I think that this was the purpose, that you started sharing Yahweh's words, and Yahweh just flat out knew of all the people on the planet. And I'm not trying to, you know, just throw accolades or kudos at you when they're not due.
But he
knew you were a straightforward, hard charger, and you were not any kind of hypocrite. That's what he knew about you. And I got to say, you're probably about the least hypocritical guy I've ever even heard. And
I think
for those reasons.
That, Yahweh wants you to be straight, you know, just...
Right.
Go where the words lead. Say what he said. Recognize your place in the whole thing. And, you know, we have this really neat position where, from God's perspective, we're like Dodd. Man, we're righteous. We're upright. We're empowered. We're enriched. We are his family. He's taking care of us. He's enjoying the relationship with it. From God's point of view, we're enriched. We're empowered. We got it made. I mean, we're really special from God's point of view. But from our own, you know, I still recognize myself as flawed and inadequate, and that combination is really comfortable.
Yeah.
It really is comfortable.
But every one of us would sit there and say the same things when it comes down to, okay, I want to do what Craig does. I want to do what Kirk does. We would say, don't do what I do.
Do what Craig does. Yeah. You know, there are so many opportunities to work on behalf of Yahweh, to work with Yahweh. And it's one of the things that, you know, Larry, for example, I've always enjoyed, is the fact that you have Unpopular Truth, the Facebook site, and you have reached gazillions of people sharing Yahweh's testimony, and you convey Yahweh's testimony based upon our discussions and the translations that are here, and you compile it in ways that are very useful to do so. But how many times have I been to Unpopular Truth?
Never.
Never.
You don't do social media.
Right. So why would I need to do it if you're doing it?
You wouldn't.
I'm not jealous of what you're doing. I'm not envious
of
what you. I love what you're doing.
Of course you're not.
But because you're doing it, why should I be doing it? And it's kind of like, okay, you're not doing a whole bunch of translations because there's no reason for you to do them if I'm providing them.
Exactly.
It's like we're just doing different things.
Division of
it's
labor.
Like Kirk went into translation from a very different perspective. He's an artist. He's looking at the letters, how these letters are written to convey the words. And so, you know, it provides a new and fresh perspective. You know, there's God doesn't need us to be robots. He's there's lots to do. He has a goal of sharing his testimony, making people aware of it, and also exposing and condemning religious and political deception. And there's lots of opportunity, lots of ways to do it. The last thing somebody should do is try to copy me or you or Kirk or JB or any of us.
Find your own and do that.
Right. I'm even talking about on a personal level.
Yeah.
I love the fact people do notes now and put them out. And, you know, I love that. There are people doing that. And there's people taking your words and putting them out there on the internet or doing, you know, doing what Richard
does. I was searching for something. I was trying to find the other
day. Last week, I couldn't believe it. And you found dozens of sites that use your translation.
Oh, yeah. Every time I would search, it would come to a site that was conveying Yahweh's name and Mikre and all of the things that we've come to know, Yisrael, using these transliterations and these translations, were just everywhere. And I was amazed by how many people have posted this information and made it available.
Yeah, and it's lovely, isn't it? It's lovely,
lovely,
and you don't even know it. And you know, you sit
happy
there and yeah, I know, and you sit there and you. What I was talking about, really, though, more than, you know, what we do as far as, you know, the work we enjoy, I even hate to call it work, but just sharing Yahweh's words in however, whatever form we do it. I'm talking about, you know, one of the things we don't do is stand there and say, you know, why don't you emulate me in your personal life? I mean, you know, that's what the religious do.
Be like me.
Oh, yeah.
Be like me.
Oh, yeah.
Be like me.
Oh, don't, yeah. About don't be like me is what I tell them.
Yeah.
Don't be stupid.
Don't be. You have the same passion. Look to the same source. Come to know the same God. Understand what he's offering. Respond to what he's offering. Be part of the same family. You know, engage in the same mission, but by all means, don't follow my example. Don't follow Larry's example.
Part of what makes this show so fun to do is we all come at everything from such different perspectives.
Right.
Speaking of looking stuff up, I was looking something up the other day, and it brought me to the Yada Yah Forum, you know, which is what gave me the idea to just do it kind of like where you could get an instant response on FB. It just, I didn't like the forum just because I could ask a question. There's so many questions in there. It might be 10 days before somebody gets in there that knew the answer, you know, kind of thing. And so I liked a more direct thing. But what I went to was, it said, and it's Larry Hendricks. He's the most despicable of the bunch on FB. As I was reading this, I was right there on Google. I was going, oh, that's really beautiful, man. That's beautiful.
You had a period of time, and I think there probably is still some of that left, hopefully a lot of it, where you took no prisoners, Ben. If somebody was going to contradict God or promote a religious notion, you were all over them. And it's the example Yosha set. So if you're going to follow somebody's example, follow Yosha's example, and that's what you do.
I'm at the point now where I really don't debate them too much. You know, somebody will say something in opposition, and what I'll say is, well, you know, I'll answer them like I have this woman in this Kippurim note and wait for her answer, which I've never gotten. But if I get some stupid answer after I've already spent, you know, three, four paragraphs explaining why she's wrong there, and here's Yahweh's words to prove it. And why are you doing the work of the Malacha? Are you going to sacrifice something? You don't need to anymore. Don't you get that part? But if they want to go to loggerheads with that, after that, I boot them off the page. I mention them by name, and I say they've been booted for lowering the collective IQ of the page. That's it.
The idea that I always found when I was dealing with Prophet of Doom and was responding to, or even the opening days of Yada Yah, and you're responding to hundreds of emails a day, is that the vast majority of the people that you're communicating with are not going to benefit from what Yahweh has to say.
No, they're not.
But there are lots of people that can read the question or the statement and your response to it that are going to find, because of the fact that you've taken the time to communicate this way. And that's been the beauty of Unpopular Truth, is that while most of the people that you have engaged with and you have exposed Yahweh's testimony to refute, they haven't benefited. But a lot of people searching for the truth have found those exchanges and have benefited from them.
We had a woman invited in. You know, we keep it as a secret group because we don't want religious people in there debating. Most of the debates I do are on my own personal page or homepage. But what happens, or somebody will tag me in a note and say, Larry Hendricks, you've got to come here and, you know, I'll read something. And then I'll offer up Yahweh's words and I'll show where they're wrong, you know. But we had a woman come in who, she absolutely asked the question. She was gung-ho. We find this with the people that they can't get enough information for 3 days is about how it works. And, oh, what about this? Oh, I need to know this. I need to know this. She actually asked, so is matzah all you're allowed to eat? Now, I'm not knocking a person for being that stupid, but
no.
Okay. No. No, you're allowed to eat all kinds of things, but you're supposed to eat your own piece alone. There's a reason for that. You're not going collectively as a group. It's up to each individual to eat his own piece, you know. And you sit there and then she came back as a teacher. And she turned out she wouldn't even want to nibble on a lamb because she's a vegetarian. And then she had the apocryphal books. She had, the gospel according to Nicodemus. And she had this and she had that.
Right.
And of course, they were all done. And of course, she got her ass booted, you know.
Wow.
Because who needs it? Here's a woman who asked such an obvious question. I've never even had anybody go, be that stupid, is all you can eat is matzah. And then after asking such a question, plays...
For a whole week, all you can have is unleavened bread. You're right.
Yeah. That's it. Brilliant. Whoa. You know, okay. So yeah, she was booted pretty quick for just stupidity.
All it says is eat, you know, bread without yeast and remove the yeast from your home. It doesn't say that only eat it ever.
No, of course not. And so I put this post up. Bring your pomegranate into your home 4 days before Pesach. Slaughter that pomegranate and paint your nose red with it. These are instructions for all time and all places from the Book of Vegan.
when Yahweh itemizes a menu. The menu is animals, protein.
Oh yeah, so sure.
Meat on there, protein, man. And he's
but
not
you know, guy. There's some doctor that'll sell you the truth for $48 for the hard copy, and I think $21 for the, soft, the paperback. And he's wrote a book called The Land of Meat and Honey, where a rabbi claims to have the truth, the real scriptures before, you know, Yahweh's real words, before all these men corrupted him with, like, eating lamb and things like this. He has the real ones locked away in a vault. To me, great way to share, guy. Great way to stand up and do what Yahweh said.
Keep them nice and locked away. Trust me. This is what they
do. But I will sell you.
I could show it to you, though. But I could.
I will sell it. Yeah, I will sell it to you, though. Yeah, that sounds like somebody working with Yahweh, because we all know Yahweh's main concern is dollars.
Yahweh said, make sure you make at least 80% profit. That was in our numbers, wasn't it?
Yeah, right.
Yes, absolutely. Uh-huh. Right there in the book of Vegan.
He told us what our profit margin needs to be.
Yeah, it was right there in the Book of Vegan, too.
Send it to me, because I'm impoverished. I need your money.
Yeah. Yeah, God has a lot of use for paper money and gold.
And before we get away, is there a block of your notes?
What if his money says that?
Somebody asked me, do you have a block of notes that they can get from you?
Somebody has a PDF file that they made, an Unpopular Truth. So I forget who did it. There's a couple people who have done it. they made like 100 notes and put them all in one PDF file or something. Mm-hmm. And what I can do is find out who did that, and I'll just send them your way, Kirk.
Okay. Thank you.
Send them to me too, please. I wouldn't mind having
All right, well, fellas, it's 9:40, I'm going to bid you adieu. I've got to fly home. My wife now is sick, so I've taken care of my son, and I'm now here in Ohio by
myself. Working
his way around
the family country.
Wow, so I'm now going to go and try to nurse my sick wife back to health. So I'm going to fly tomorrow morning back to Charlottesville, and then hopefully come back here to Ohio and enjoy our little granddaughter sometime first part of next week.
Okay, my friend.
All right.
It's been a pleasure as always. I'm glad it was a nice, light evening and a lot of fun, really, more than anything tonight.
Yeah. Always. Always fun. Hey. Always light. Yep. Good time.
Okay. See you later.
I'm going to go relieve my wife.
See you later. Bye.